Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. The man to my left is Paul Dottino. I am John Schmoke. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513 or on Twitter at hashtag Giants Chat. You've been inundated with guests over the past 3 months or so. Well, you know what? Today, it's all about you. So get on the phones. Give us a call. It'll be all calls and all Twitter questions from hashtag Giants Chat all show long as we get you ready for rookie minicamp. The players report on Thursday. They leave on Sunday. We'll have one open practice on Friday. Of course, Giants.com will have coverage of that and of player arrivals on Thursday afternoon as well. And, Paul, we've been talking about these guys for what seems like an eternity. We finally get to see them in person for the first time this week, and I, for one, am very excited.
Yeah, because, you know, there are a lot of things we've heard about them, as you've said, as some very exciting and some very like, wow, what to expect. We just don't know. I think the thing that I usually like about the rookie minicamp, John, is that when you see these guys walk on the campus for the first time, not only do you see them physically stature-wise and say, okay, look, that's what his build is. It really is 6'2", 210, or whatever it is. But the other thing is you see how they conduct themselves. And I know that some people don't care about this, but you know when Coach used to say you only get one chance to make a first impression? There is something to that. There are guys who usually have walked onto campus for the first time as rookies who made less than stellar impressions, who for one reason or another, it's not a coincidence, they wind up not being what you thought they were going
to
be.
And to me, the early impressions, at least for the top draft picks, have been positive for the guys we've had a chance to talk about.
Yeah.
So I think our expectations are pretty high.
They are.
The other thing, Paul, that I want to see is it's one thing to watch these guys on video. You watch the high 50, you watch highlights.
Sure.
Yeah, they look fast, they look explosive, but you really don't get a feel until you see them up close and personal. Like, I knew Odell Beckham Jr. was a really good athlete. You saw him at the combine, he had all these great numbers. But until you saw him start and stop and accelerate and cut in practice, you weren't really wowed because now you've seen him up close right in front of your eyes. So I think I want to see how fast Evan Engram looks as a tight end in person. I want to see how big Dalvin Tomlinson looks in person.
Yeah.
I want to see what kind of stature Davis Webb has. You know,
sure.
Does he look like he's, you know, 6'4", 230 pounds? I want to see all those things up close and personal.
Agreed.
And that's something you can only see until they walk in the building.
Well, you know, the other thing is the skill position guys, at least, as you say, they'll do some running around. The skill position guys.
Sure.
That you will not only see, you know, whether or not they look fast, but the other thing is the fluidity of their motions. When you watch some of these guys running around, you'll see how they cut.
How smooth are they?
Do they have a nice stride?
Right.
Do they look like they belong? And, you know, it's little stuff like that that starts putting little seeds in your mind as you're piecing together what you think this guy's going to be. So, yeah, it's a fun time. And again, it's the next step toward the season, which gets me very excited.
Now, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to tell you a whole lot about the offensive and defensive linemen because there's no contact in rookie minicamp.
No.
So they're not really going to be able to do much against each other. There'll be a lot of drills with pads and things of that nature, but we're really not going to see them go one-on-one. So those are things to keep an eye on as we head towards rookie minicamp. Of course, stay tuned to Giants.com for all that coverage. If you want to listen or watch the remainder of the show, head over to Giants.com or the Giants mobile app, and you can check out the rest of the show there. And for those of you hanging with us, we'll take your calls at 201-939-4513 or go to hashtag Giants Chat. Paul, a few things that I want to keep an eye on when we get the rookie minicamp this week, besides the generalities that we just spoke about. I think a few things that are interesting is seeing how these guys absorb the playbook. And I, for one, don't understand why such a big deal was made about Patrick Mahomes saying, boy, that playbook is really big. I don't know if I'm going to learn all that. No crap. What have we been telling you about Mahomes and Davis Webb for the past 3 months? They're going to look at these playbooks and they're going to say, whoa. Guess what Eli Manning did when he saw an NFL playbook for the first time? He said, whoa, that's just the nature of the beast. Period.
First of all, I'd love to see that interview in its proper context, because what exactly was he asked that made him come out with that answer being so incredulous? Look, dude, It's like triple the size of a phone book. It is what it is.
I know, but now, see, my thing is
why
that...
Why would he answer the question that way?
Well, I expect that answer, and I'm fine with it. I don't know why the media made such a big deal about it. Of course he's going to be wowed by the size of the pill book. Everybody knew that going in.
I guess what I'm saying is I'm surprised he was wowed himself. He should have known what to expect himself. And to me, it's like, yeah, it's a lot, but I'll deal with it.
Here's how I look at it.
You know what I mean?
Here's how I look at it. There's a great book that I know you don't really read books, but
I don't.
There's a great book that
comes out.
Too
busy watching tape.
I know you are. There's a big book. They write a new biography of Vince Lombardi.
Yes.
And Paul Dettino's heading to the store to pick it up. And you're
get
like,
it.
You know what?
I have to have it.
I have to have it. I want to read this thing. It's long. It's supposed to be great. You know what? When you go to the bookshelf and you pick it up and you realize that it's 4 inches thick, even though you knew it was a long book, you're still like, wow, that's pretty thick.
That's true.
Think of it that way.
That's true. I remember when I saw the baseball encyclopedia for the first time in the store.
You're pretty wowed by that, right?
I was blown away by it. It looked as if it was some kind of medical journal. It was so big, so thick, so heavy. And I remember picking it up off the shelf and asking Mom and Dad if I could buy it. And it was like, wow.
And they said,
that's a slab.
No, you cannot.
Eventually, they did get it for me, though.
Now, the baseball encyclopedia was cool because it had all the past and current players, which is why it was fun.
That's why. Look. Folks, you know, I know it's hard to believe because I'm such a football junkie, but when I was a kid, in addition to being a football junkie, I was as much a baseball junkie. And I would spend hours, John, hours upon hours of just reading through that like it was a phone book. It was unbelievable. And I'm still a baseball guy. I'm a Yankees guy. I admit to that. If you read my Twitter, you know it. But football is 1 and 1A. Baseball is like a distant second.
Now, I think our producer, Dave Dominic, makes an excellent point here. Now, the baseball encyclopedia is probably about this big. Of course, when you were a kid, it was probably more like that big. Because there simply haven't been that many players around yet. I mean, what was that, like 1940? It's only been about 20 years of baseball at that point. There couldn't have been that many players in there.
Oh, God.
Ty Cobb was in like his third year in the league.
I asked for
perfect.
This, didn't I? I really did. You know, well, look, it was hard for them to be able to print it on those stone tablets. That's why it was so heavy.
Exactly. Anyway, how he circled into the baseball encyclopedia, I don't know. Rob Browning entered this conversation somehow. That's an inside joke, by the way, one of our editors who likes to talk in circles. Anyway,
yes.
The point being, these kids get oogads of information thrown at them in the course of 2 or 3 days. You're never going to learn anything. But I think the important thing is that the guys understand the concepts because it's not – I think what people don't understand sometimes is not necessarily a matter of memorizing every individual plays.
Right.
There are concepts that travel from play to play that once a guy understands, you can apply that to multiple situations. And that's what I think they want to see these guys kind of absorb. And then, of course, more importantly, take that information and show the ability to translate it to the field of play.
To a lesser degree, John. To a lesser degree, and this was a Tom Coughlin tool. Now, not every coach does this, and so I'll be honest, I don't know if Coach McAdoo puts as much emphasis on it as Tom did, but Tom would purposely inundate these kids, especially the guys who are tryouts and not necessarily signed rookie free agents, but tryouts, inundate them during the 3-day mini camp and quiz them. And for guys who are able to regurgitate stuff, that put a little extra check mark in the coach's head. And he said, you know what? This guy can retain stuff in a hurry. He can get it back to me in a heartbeat. He's got something there that I want to check out. And that was the first step in order to be able to get yourself an invitation to July training camp. That was a big deal for Tom. I don't know if Coach McAdoo stresses that as much as Tom did. We could ask him, you know, at the end of the week. But that was a mini test, a pop quiz test, if you will, that helped the guy enhance his value to the roster.
Do you have any other rookie minicamp thoughts before I get to the calls? I want to get to them early here.
No, let's go.
The show. All right,
let's
here we go. 201-939-4513. Paul has run out of things to say. Who would have thought? Let's go to
go
Zach.
Go Yankees!
Zach, wow, dude. It's May. Look, I'm a Yankees fan. Take it all. I love the Yankees. Relax. It's May.
Can we get Aaron Judge out here to try out?
This is the equivalent of week 2 in the NFL season.
No,
right?
No, but
calm down.
Aaron Judge.
Stop.
Aaron Judge.
Zach,
the passer.
Zach, save me. What's going on,
yeah,
pal?
Wow, you guys are really Yankee fans over there, huh, P-Dot?
Hey, man, they're cooking.
Hey, I got this question that keeps popping in my head,
sure,
and I can't think of anybody better to answer this question or at least give me your insight than you guys. So in the division, we got the Dallas Cowboys and the Philadelphia Eagles pretty much in their offseason, they kind of addressed their defensive line. They were forced to address their defensive backs, but they really addressed their defensive line, Taco Charlton, Derek Barnett. And now we, as the Giants, didn't address anything to do with the offensive line really that much at all. So with that being said, we upgraded our receivers. We didn't upgrade our offensive line. They upgraded their defensive line. They didn't upgrade their defensive backs. What do you think is going to have more of an impact on this division?
Whew, that is a multifaceted question, but I think it's a good one.
A lot of parts.
Here's the thing about Dallas. They drafted all these defensive backs to replace guys that they lost. So they're not necessarily adding, they're replacing. So are, you know, Chidobe Awuzie, Nolan Carroll, their free agent addition, Jordan Lewis, you know, Xavier Woods, Marquez White, are those guys going to be better than, you know, Barry Church, J.J. Wilcox, Morris Claiborne, and Brandon Carr? Off the bat, I can't imagine
how you
would think they're going to be. Now, maybe by the end of the year they've grown to that level, sure, but it's hard for me to think that they're going to be there right away. Now, I do think Dallas's defensive line will be better this year. They lost a couple of guys, but I think Taco Charlton's a pretty good all-around player. I think he'll be a he'll be solid right away. We'll see what he can develop into. And they're also getting their fourth-round pick back from injury last year, who missed all year. And DeMarcus Lawrence should theoretically be healthy for more of the season this year than he was last year. So I think their front will be a little bit better. I think their secondary will be worse. I think the Eagles, and I think you forgot this in your analysis, I think the biggest impact on the Eagles
–
I think that's part of it. I like what they've done to their receiving corps. I think one thing that really hurt Carson Wentz last year, guys weren't getting open. I mean, you got past Jordan Matthews and a couple of tight ends.
Sure.
They didn't even have a full-time running back. You know, they were, kind of trying to hodgepodge that position. I think the Eagles offensively are going to be a lot better this year. I think their defense will probably be about the same, maybe a little bit better, but I don't think it's going to be much better. But I think the Eagles offense is where you're going to see a lot of improvement. I think the Redskins front is going to be a lot better. As for the Giants, when we've kind of talked about this a little bit, Zach, you're right. They didn't address the offensive line externally. They think internally there'll be some improvement. I'm in wait-and-see mode. Let's see what they do when the guys get out there on the field. But I think that they're added weapons, in their opinion, and I'm sure this is how they kind of addressed it. If we can't help protection, we're going to give Eli more weapons. So there's no doubt they have more weapons for Eli to throw the ball to, and they're going to hope that will dissuade opponents from pressuring and blitzing as much because there are so many weapons for Eli to throw the ball to. So that's how I kind of see all those different things kind of adding together. Frankly, I think it's the best division in football along with the AFC West. I think those are the two best divisions. I think both are going to be super competitive. I don't think there's a weak team in either division.
Considering 4 or 5 years ago, look what it was.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way,
two or three years ago.
Yeah, and both those divisions are now playing each other this year too. So I think those two divisions are going to depress the records in the division because they're so strong. I don't think you can have a team that's going to win more than 11 games in either division simply because the teams are so good top to bottom.
Yeah, it will be very hard to get that
bottom. So how many games do you think we're going to win?
I think the Giants will be anywhere between 10 or 11 would be my guess right now. Based on the talent on the roster, that's where I would probably put it.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
All right. Hey, I appreciate you guys. And P-Dot, second time talking to you, but Schmelk, you're the glue here. We appreciate you.
I appreciate it, Zach. Thank you, man.
All right.
Take it easy. And, you know, I said this to Feagles last week. You know who I think is going to be really good this year and people haven't been talking about it and I think they're sleeping on it because of the franchise has moved and they're going to be in a bad situation in L.A.? Take a look at the Chargers depth chart during our next call. The Chargers are going to be very good this year. Just take a look at the depth chart. I want to get your take and think about it. 201-939-4513. Before you do that, do you have a comment on Zach's point with the teams in the division making improvements?
I mean, we've discussed this at various points over the last couple of weeks, and I think, quite honestly, all three teams in the Giants division greatly enhanced themselves in the draft. Even better than the Giants did. I think the Giants did well. I think they did okay. But I think the other teams, who, by the way, let's not kid ourselves now, Philly and Washington were in a better position to draft because they had worse records.
Of course.
So they're supposed to enhance themselves more. And Dallas, of course, they had to rebuild their entire defense, basically. And, maybe not all of it, but half of it. But in a good defensive draft.
They got lucky that this – or you know what?
Perfect time.
You know what? Maybe they had the foresight to understand we can let some of these guys go because of the draft. Whatever the case might be, it worked out well for them that it was a defensive draft the year that they had to replace a lot of defensive players.
What, they draft 7 defensive players?
Yeah, 4. Let me just – they drafted Lewis from Michigan, the kid from Colorado – they drafted 4 defensive backs, 1 defensive lineman, 1 receiver. Then I don't know who their 7th round picks were, but I know who their top 6 were.
I mean, it fell right. I'm not going to give them credit for having foresight to do that, but it did fall right for them.
Well, again, I have no idea if they did or not. But
yeah, it's impossible.
Either
to
way,
say.
It worked out.
But so for that reason, they really helped themselves because their area of desperate need was where they could go shopping and compile a whole bunch of guys.
I'm curious to see how Washington's offense is going to suffer or change based on their wide receiver changes.
Yeah,
because
they
new
got
guys,
the power back, though, John.
No,
they got
did,
the power back.
But they have new guys coming in. You know, Pierre Garçon, to me, is such a quarterback-friendly type of receiver. He's always in the right spot. He's a good catcher.
He is.
I'm curious to see how Kirk Cousins is affected by those changes. We'll have to wait and see. Take a look at the Chargers.
Yeah.
I want to go to Nick and Sean in
Do
the
it.
Meantime. Nick, what's up, pal?
Hey, guys, it's a good Tuesday, don't you think?
Oh, it's a fantastic Tuesday, Nick. What's up with you?
I'm all right. I just wanted to talk about the draft. I haven't been on since before.
Bring it on.
Before we get to that, I have a question for Paul. If you're not too busy looking at that depth chart,
go ahead. What do you got?
We got DJ Fluker as a free agent. Why is everybody so upset that we didn't address the position with a big name in the draft? Where would you have ranked Fluker in this year's draft?
Well, you can't because, A, the veteran experience that he brings to the table is something that none of these questionable tackles in the draft are able to lean on. So it's like apples and oranges. You cannot compare them at all. But if you want to compare skill set, strictly skill set, when Fluker came out of the draft, he would have been a top 3 pick in this draft. I mean, when he came out of Bama.
You mean a top 3 pick among offensive linemen?
No, he'd have been a top 5 pick overall.
Oh, you're crazy.
Oh, no. He was 11.
But he wasn't a left tackle.
He wasn't
a left tackle.
But he was 11.
I'm sorry.
He was 11.
In a terrible draft, by the way.
Okay, which turned out to be. Mm-hmm. But at the time, he was 11. The way people are so desperate for tackles right now, even though he projected as a right when he came out, there's no question about that. To me, it's not a far stretch to say 3's high. But to say from 11 to 5, that's not a far stretch to say because he was miles ahead of the stuff that came out this year. Miles.
Right. I don't disagree with that. But here's my counterpoint. When's the last time a non-left tackle offensive lineman went like the top 7-8 picks? Sheriff. That would be the last guy.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. I mean, I'm just saying the teams this year were so desperate for any tackle that the way it worked out. Look, these guys, none of these first-round tackles belong there.
Here's my counter-argument to that. We talked about how crazy free agency was, right? How all these guys that weren't very good got all this money.
Right.
How come he had to settle for a 1-year low-money contract?
Well, see.
If people liked him
here's
so much.
Here's the thing that we don't know about. Here's the thing we don't know about. We don't know how many other teams talked to him. We don't know what other offers were on the table. What we do know...
You're telling me he passed up a big money contract?
No. I'm not telling you passed up. But we don't know what he did get. He may have gotten more than $3 million of an offer than the Giants
did. Sure, who knows?
He may have.
Of course.
So it's unfair to just say, well, that's all he could get. He may have been able to get something else from a team maybe that he didn't want to go to.
But I wouldn't imagine it was a significant amount more.
Might have been a million or two more.
I mean, I have no idea. I'm just saying, in a year.
And he's also been hurt.
All I'm saying is that in a year where some pretty suspect offensive linemen got a lot of money, the demand for him wasn't
could have been. That's fair. Right. A guy who's been hurt and a guy who at times has played overweight, you know. But I will say this. By taking the 1-year prove-it contract, he's also banking on himself.
Correct.
As opposed to maybe there was Team X out there that said, I want you on a 2-year deal, at $4 million a year, which is more than what he got from the Giants. But he said to himself, I'm not taking the 2 years because I know if I do a prove-it one-year deal, I can do better.
And by the way, he has an opportunity to earn a starting job here, which is also a good opportunity.
So,
and that's possible, sure.
You know, there are a lot of different variables here.
My point, though, is that a four-year $25 million offer probably wasn't one that he said, no, thank you, Jim.
I agree with that. It couldn't have been.
That's all I'm saying.
You would have been a fool not to take it.
Of course.
Absolutely.
Nick, go ahead. I'm sorry. We talked an awful long time there.
Oh, you
but
guys are
I am
right.
A fluker
it's
guy.
Good to hear your banter back and forth. I love the bouncing of ideas and everything. Anyway, so Ingram, he's going to be a mismatch for any corner. He's a tight end, so he's going to be primarily against linebackers. Who can really cover him?
Well, safeties more
the
than
guy's
linebackers.
He's a freak, size and speed. Mm-hmm. Tomlinson, he's just like Hankins. He probably has a bit better pass rush, don't you think?
I would put them around the same. When both guys are drafted, I think the two players are extremely similar.
Okay.
We're going to have to see on that one.
Yep.
All right. Webb, he doesn't really have negatives. He's a clean slate with some positives, don't you think?
Well, I think his negatives is that he is such a clean slate. I mean, the negative is that he's never taken snaps from under center in college. He's never had to make reads while the ball's in his hand. His inexperience running a pro-style system would be his negative, in my opinion.
Okay, but I mean, he's a really nice foundation to build upon.
In terms of physical tool set, he has everything you'd want out of a quarterback.
Yeah. Who's our fourth round? Can't remember now.
Wayne Gallman.
Gallman?
Yeah, the running back.
All right. Paul, I know you like the power back. I would have liked the power back, but we got Perkins and Gallman. Two guys, very similar. Look at Atlanta.
Yep.
They're very similar backs, Coleman and Foreman.
Yeah, you know what? I actually think, and you know, if you want to go back to Green Bay when they used to split between, you know, Starks and Grant, and then there was a couple other guys in that mix too at one point or another.
Here's the bottom line. There's more than one way to skin a cat, and you can certainly scheme your way through with a variety of personnel combinations. The Giants, in some ways, have varied and differed from my preferred combination, but I'm not the head coach and I'm not the GM.
And the Giants aren't a power I-formation team anymore. They're just not.
We don't know what the 53 is going to be in September. I still think that there will be veterans who are going to be signing with a number of teams as we go into the summer. And you guys know about that
Mr. New England.
New England area running back who is still sitting out there. I still think he would be a perfect fit for what the Giants are doing here and would add a really important piece to the puzzle. I hope it happens. I don't know if it will, but I hope it does.
Yeah, I mean, I think these two guys running behind Ellison, I think he's going to be more of a fullback. I don't think they're going to use him as a tight end. But I think we'll be able to do some damage on the ground. Anyway, Avery Moss, he looks like a true pass rusher. He looks like he'll be great depth. I don't know if he'll eventually make his way as a starter. And then Biznawati. He'll be great depth. Do you guys think that he'll be able to play tackle or guard? And I'll take it off the air. Thank you.
Hey, appreciate the call. Look, he has all his experience in tackle. So, I mean, and the Giants said after the draft they expect him to be a tackle at first. And we'll see if he can handle the speed of NFL pass rushers. That's really, Paul, what's going to be what determines it. Can he handle the speed of NFL edge rushers?
The people I talk to about Biznawati tell me he's a Richie Seibert type. He's an overachiever, a blue-collar worker, a junkyard dog who foams at the mouth at the snap and will fight you tooth and nail for every crumb on his plate. That's the kind of guy I want on my depth chart for offensive linemen.
You threw like six metaphors into that description. I like that.
That's what Richie was. You know Richie.
I do, yes.
And you know what? If he is 75% the player that Richie Seibert was, then the Giants got themselves a good pick.
Oh, absolutely. 201-939-4513. You have a chance to look at that Chargers depth
chart? Yeah, I'm not impressed. I don't like the running game. I'm not sold on the offensive line.
Wait, timeout. You don't like Melvin Gordon?
Yeah, but what else is there? You're talking about one guy.
Yeah, Melvin Gordon's a 20-carry a game back.
You need others. And look, I don't want to get down on Andre Williams, but obviously he's in show-me mode with them, too.
No, look, I agree. They don't have a lot behind Melvin Gordon.
Okung is playing left tackle. And
he's certainly better than what they had last year at left tackle.
Yeah, but
they added two starting guards in the draft.
I'm not a big fan of this offensive line, John, and I just don't know if they're going to be able to run the ball. They got to block it too. Remember that. They got to block it.
See, here's my thing. They went 5-11 last year. Their point differential is only minus 13. They lost a ton of close games. They turned the ball over more than any other team in the league. Those things are going to normalize a little bit. They're also injured more than any other team in the league.
Yeah.
They're going to get Keenan Allen back. Mike Williams is their first-round draft pick. Rivers is still a good quarterback. Their offensive line is certainly better than it was last year. Even if you look at their point differential last year, they should have been 8-18. At minus 13, you should be about 8-8. So even if you're 2 or 3 wins better, you're up to 9-10 wins.
Well, I was going to say I could see them being 500, but I don't think they're a playoff team.
I think they got a real shot.
Okay. It's May.
And they have a good young defense. Good young defense.
It's May.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Adam in New York. He's up next. What's up, Adam?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
All right, Adam. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. There was two things I wanted to touch on. The first was that I think a lot of people are they're not valuing the extra draft pick we had this year, which is Darian Thompson coming back in the secondary. Because last year, if you were going to point to one weakness in our defense last year, it might have been Andrew Adams at free safety, Leon Hall. That might have been the biggest hole on the team. And now we have the guy who was going to be a stud last year coming back. I think that people shouldn't sleep on Darian Thompson.
Adam, I don't think we know he's going to be a stud. He needs to show that he's going to be a stud. I think he had a good early showing, but I'm not willing to say he's going to be a stud with surety until he goes out there and shows it to us.
I think the coaches were pretty high on him, though, so I'm not – I think he's someone to keep a close eye on this year.
Oh, no, I agree, and I have high hopes for Darian Thompson. I have no doubt about it. I think he can earn his way back into the starting lineup. I think he can be a good free safety. I don't disagree with any of that, but when you say stud, you're talking all pro, and I'm not willing to throw that moniker on him yet.
No, okay.
That's a bit premature.
I wouldn't say that, yeah. And the second point I wanted to bring up was with Evan Engram – I know he's not Paul's favorite pick, but I think he's going to do some things for the offense that Paul is going to like with the using two tight end sets and things like that, where I think it was like over 90% of the time we had 11 personnel out there last year. And I think that's going to change significantly. I think it might go down to more like 80, 75%. And I think that's going to help a lot with the run game.
Yeah, I think that's very possible.
I would only say this. If you listen to the show all last week and since the draft, I've warmed to the Giants' thinking. I understand it better in retrospect. And go for it, you know. If this is the way it's going to be, go for it. Again, there's more than one way to skin a cat. It may not be my preferred way, but guess what? The 80s Parcells Giants don't exist anymore, okay? It's time to move on. So if the Giants can make this work, God bless them.
All right. So, folks, I want you to put this on your calendars. It's May 9th, 2017. Paul Dottino has left the 1980s. Congratulations, Paul.
Okay.
Welcome to the 90s. Thanks a lot for
Sunday,
the call, man.
Monday, happy day.
Exactly.
Did you want to just read this for that one caller from before?
No, you can do it.
Bovada LV, Tom Rock of Newsday, is tweeting out the odds makers, the official odds makers. I guess they're the best internet odds makers around the world, the Bovada LV, saying the wins or losses over under. Dallas 9.5 in the NFC East, Giants 9, Philly 8, Washington 7.5.
Like we said, it's going to be tight, folks.
It's going to be tight, but, you know, I do think the Giants can win double digits, so I would go over on that. And I
so would I. I would go over. In fact, I go over. I go over on Dallas, New York, and Philly.
I'd go under on Dallas. Philly. I'd go.
You think Dallas only win 9 games, huh?
Dallas is going to be lucky to be 500. I go.
Why
Giants,
do you say that?
Their defense will be a shambles in September. They'll probably be 0-4.
You hated their secondary last year, and they still won 13 games.
And now they've had to rebuild with youth, and we all know that youth doesn't know squat on defense until October. It takes a minimum of a month to get the scheme down. And Marinelli, who is a really good defensive coordinator, is going to be pulling his hair out for the first month of the season.
Okay, that might be true.
So I think they got big trouble to start the season.
Okay, their second game of the year against the Broncos, who can't throw the ball. Their third game of the year is against the Cardinals, who struggle throwing the football. So that'll help them a little bit.
Yeah. I still think they're going to be all over the place, running around like a chicken without a head on defense.
Okay.
I know what defenses who are rebuilt, what happens to them, especially with good defensive coordinators who run complex schemes. It takes time.
Well, Marinelli does not run complex schemes. He runs one of the more simple defenses in the league.
Yeah, but he does require a lot of the back end. And those young players are not, they're not going to be prepared for this.
I think 0-4 to start the season is a little strong.
1-3, okay, fine.
But I still think that's a little strong.
They're,
but okay.
They're not winning 10. The Giants, I'm going over for the Giants, under on Dallas, over for Washington, maybe over for Philly. But that's where I would stand. But, hey, that's why they call it gambling, right? Because you just don't.
Yeah, well, yeah. We're talking about teams' records all the way in
And that's the other thing. May. Why are we doing this? We don't even know the 53.
Yeah, I know.
I hate doing that. Here I am. I slap myself. Why am I doing that?
Yeah, it's your fault. You brought it up.
The caller was asking about wins. But, yeah, until the 53 are in. But my overall general philosophy doesn't change. They've overhauled that defense. So much youth in Dallas. They are going to be running around pointing at each other. Oh, you had that guy. What happened on that 50-yard touchdown pass we just gave up? It's going to be fun to watch that defense fall apart in September. I'm telling you that much.
Paul's dancing on graves in May.
Hey, that's what I see.
What do you mean you haven't even seen anything yet? You haven't been on the field what you've seen. You haven't seen anything.
I've seen young rebuilding defenses that take a tremendous amount
that's
of
true.
Time
I don't disagree
to
with that.
Gel.
You can be right.
Ask Spags about this. You don't need me to tell you.
I understand. I got you. I'm not arguing that
which
point.
Which is why, folks, you should be thrilled the Giants are going to Dallas opening day. It's like a gift certificate from the league. Anyway, go ahead.
I want to go back to the point the guy made about Ingram real quick. And this is something we talked about off the air last week.
Yes.
And now that we're on the air together, I think we can talk about it on the
What's
air.
What's that?
And I'm sure fans probably aren't going to like what we're about to say, but I'm going to say it anyway because I, in my honest heart, God's honest truth, I believe this is to be the case. Evan Ingram's success as a rookie to me is going to have a lot less to do with his overall numbers than it's going to do with his overall impact on the offense as a whole. Let me explain. The Giants are going to roll out three really good wide receivers. Sterling Shepard, Brandon Marshall, Odell Beckham Jr. Eli's going to throw the ball to them a lot. Yeah, he's going to throw the ball to Evan Ingram too. But if you think Evan Ingram's going to come out here and catch 60 balls this year for 900 and something yards, I hate to tell you, it's probably not going to happen. But here's the difference. Odell Beckham's two extra 70-yard catches down the sideline, or Sterling Shepard's post corner, or Brandon Marshall's stop and go, those are going to be open because of Ingram's presence in the middle of the field. So the success of the Ingram pick to me is going to be dictated by how he forces other defenses to change what they're doing to deal with the Giants' offense as a whole. Ingram could very well have 42 catches this year for 675 yards and five touchdowns, and he could have a huge impact on the Giants' offense based on what else happens. That's the point that I think we talked about last week that I think it's important for fans to understand because of the variety and number of weapons here. Don't expect him to come out of here and have a 70-catch rookie year.
We were totally on board with this when we chatted about it the other day, and I couldn't agree with you more, John. This one we're 100% in agreement on. And don't forget, if he's going to be drawing safety help down the center of the field, that opens things up for the little pass out of the backfield. All of a sudden, guess what? Shane Vereen's catching a little check down. He goes 15 yards because the safety can't come up and help. How about even the draw where if the running back gets through that initial line of scrimmage, all of a sudden now, instead of a strong safety who's in the box and meeting him nose-to-nose for a 3-, 4-, 5-yard gain, maybe he gains 8, 9, or 10.
How about defensive personnel?
Makes a big difference.
How often does Evan Ingram not allow other teams to have two linebackers on the field instead of one?
You know, and that's why, folks, I had to warm up to this entire concept after the fact of him being drafted. Because I started to understand better exactly what the video game mentality is going to be with this offense. And I see what they can do to schematically raise their level of play to new heights. I'd still rather punch people in the mouth like Lombardi, but I get it.
Let's go to Bash in Ohio. He's up next. What's up, Bash?
Paul.
Hey, Bash.
How are you doing, John? What's going on, Paul?
Doing well.
I want to talk about real quick. Yeah. Just some more questions for Paul. I want to chime in a little bit on the conversation y'all had yesterday with Lance about the running back death. I wanted to ask, I know y'all talk about Blunt and everything out in New England and why he hasn't been signed yet, and I always talk about as far as money and position and everything as far as where he want to play. Is there any other running backs and possibly out there, dumpers, that you see, Paul, and we may look at that in free agency or maybe released from teams? I'm thinking maybe Matt Jones in Washington with the signing of Bradson and P-Ron. I know he has fumbling issues, and possibly Ivory over in Jacksonville with the signing up with the Bradson of their running back. Is there any other dumpers out there that we may be looking at besides Blunt?
And Bash, by the way, one other point too. One of the reasons Blunt might not have signed yet, starting today, anybody that teams add in free agency do not count towards the compensatory draft pick calculation.
That's correct.
Next year. So teams might be more willing to sign those veterans now. Paul, now you can answer his question.
Well, I think the other thing you have to consider as well is that how do you know it's not a team thing? Maybe the timing of this is LeGarrette Blunt. Maybe he, as a 30-year-old veteran, has decided, you know what, I'm going to wait a little bit because I'm enjoying training on my own with my own trainer, wherever it is that I am, and I don't necessarily want to report to all these mandatory, these off-season programs, the mandatory mini camps, the this, the that. Maybe LeGarrette Blunt himself says, I got a pretty good idea of what I'm going to do, but I'm going to wait till later on in the summer so I can kind of cruise the rest of this spring and summer on my own and do what I want to do.
It's funny. Nick Mangold was on with Bob Pop on Sirius this morning. He goes, I forget how the conversation came up, but he goes, you know, it's every football player's dream to have to get to skip training camp, show up the last week of August, and be ready to play in week one.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I don't think LeGarrette Blunt's in that situation. You know, I really don't, but I do think he will probably sign wherever he's going to sign a little bit later on in the calendar year. Having said that, John does make a good point technicality-wise. Certainly from this point forward, yep. You could start putting that more in play than you have in the last several weeks.
Okay. Now, as far as any other running backs, thumpers, as you see out there,
you know, here's the funny part. There are no other thumpers on the street right now unless you consider Ben Tate, who played in that crazy spring league, that developmental league that they just had, and he took a year off after being injured.
Ben Tate used to be with Houston? That Ben Tate,
who 2 years ago played with the Browns,
he's never healthy.
Was hurt. He was never healthy.
No.
He was from Auburn. He's a thumper. He's a short yardage guy, but he was injured a lot, took a year off. He's making a comeback. And he was in that NFL Spring League just a month ago.
I had no idea he was even still trying to play.
Ahmad Bradshaw was in that league, too.
No way.
Yeah, he's trying to make a comeback. Now, you know, I don't hold out much. So that's how slim it is, okay? It's LeGarrette Blunt, and now you're all the way down to Ben Tate. That tells you what's out there.
Okay, setting down one time in real quick, fellas, before I get off. I want to talk a little bit about Evan Engram as far as what we just talked about, John. I just heard you talk about as far as what he brings to the team and everything. As far as Evan Engram in college, you know, we got big names like Odell and Brandon Marshall and Sterling and the ball going around. Is there anything as far as this college? As far as I know him being the number one receiver in Mississippi as far as targets and stuff. You know, we got Odell and Brandon who wants their balls thrown to him and stuff as far as the pass. It's switching to Odell and Brandon where having balls thrown their targets up. Is there any issues with Engram as far as that regards, as far as targets? And one thing I want to say before you answer that, as far as I think Sterling's not going to have a big year. As far as that thing, I know Eli had a lot of games last year where Victor Cruz and Sterling had zero targets the whole game, or the games he's speaking of, as far as him not targeting. So it's games I see where they're not going to be getting the targets they want in the games. And I see Sterling having a down year, like a sophomore slump as far as having a season like Victor Cruz for 39 catches, probably a little bit more touchdowns and receiving yards, but having not a productive year with the four receivers we have on hand and somebody's losing out on production with us having all this. What do y'all think about that?
Thank you, Bash. Well, first of all, Evan Engram better not complain about targets because he's the rookie on the team, and that's not going to go well for him.
No, I don't think so.
So that's number one. Number two, you know, yeah, I've been kind of thinking about this too, Bash. I think it's a good question. Where are the targets going to come from? Are the Giants going to throw more than last year even, and so they're going to get more targets out that way? I think, you know what, bring up the Giants' list for targets last year.
Yep.
And I'm curious to see how many Beckham had. Because I have a funny feeling that you know where a lot of these targets are going to come from? I think they're going to come from Odell Beckham Jr. I'm not saying a lot, but I think he's going to get targeted less than he has the last couple of years. Because the way that, West Coast offense runs, Paul, I know he said he thinks Sterling Shepard's going to have a sophomore slump, and no, I don't think he's going to be as productive as last year. But there are specific plays and stuff where you need the slot receiver to be your primary guy. I mean, there just are. The slot receiver is so valuable in the NFL these days. You know, he's going to get his 50 catches, I think. I just don't know where the – it's a good question. I'm not sure where the target's going to come from, Bash. It's a really good question.
Well, you figure Beckham's target number in his first 3 years, 130, 158, and 169 last season.
I would put that back down to around 145 or 150.
And you know what?
This year.
I'm going to tell you what. I could care less if he's back down to 130. That means he goes back to his rookie season with 91 grabs for 1,300 yards and 12 touchdowns. I'm fine with that.
Now, his catch percentage then will have to improve than what it was the last couple of years.
You know,
the efficiency of it.
I'd be fine if he only gets 130 targets, to be perfectly frank with you. Brandon Marshall's making plays,
right,
and Ingram's making plays. Beckham getting 130 targets like he did as a rookie is perfectly acceptable. Really.
No argument for me. That's why I said I think targets might come from Beckham simply because he's had so many.
Hey, to be honest with you, maybe it's not such a bad idea he takes a few less hits this season. The way he gets targeted, if I may pardon the pun, by
not
defensive
the official
players.
NFL targeting, but
right.
The way he draws attention from physical NFL defensive backs.
Yes,
how
he does.
How about we put it that way?
Yes, he does. They make sure he knows he's been tackled.
Well, and frankly, if there's a great wide receiver on the other team, that's what you want your defensive backs to
yes,
do, too.
Yes, so maybe that's not such a terrible thing.
No question. All right, let's go to Len in Columbia, Maryland. Hi, Len. How are you?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing great. What's up?
Yeah, John, you got me perplexed with your talk about Ingram in the last 5 minutes.
Why is that?
Because right after the draft, one of the things I said to you was to you guys was, you know, I like the pick, okay, but who's coming off the field? This is the 23rd pick in the draft. You're throwing out a number like 22 catches?
No. I never said 22 catches.
Said
I said between.
Yeah, said,
no,
said
I said
no,
42.
He said 42. He said 40. Len, he said 42.
Len, I did not say 22 catches. I said 42 catches.
Yeah, he said 42. I know. I was sitting right here. He said 42.
Okay.
42
thank
for about
you,
650,
I
right?
Her.
Yeah,
and five touchdowns.
I feel a little better about
of
because
course.
When I first brought up the point about who's coming off the field right after the draft, and I like the pick. Yeah, I mean, I like the pick. I think he was the best player there. I think the phone was ringing in the war room, right? And we probably could have made a deal. But, you know, I think the pick's okay. But I think somebody's numbers are going
to
go down.
Yeah, they have
to. I think we're going to be talking about sophomore slump for Shepard. You know, why did we sign Marshall? He didn't give us as many catches as possible. And as far as I'm concerned, how many targets did Beckham have last year? 169?
160. And, you know, that's not a bad thing. If all these, you know, all these targets kind of get leveled out a little bit, you know what that means? Other teams don't know where you're going with the football. That's a good thing.
Okay, let me go back to my Beckham point.
Len, I got a better question for you.
I want to try to be accurate because I messed up the first number.
Okay.
But was it 169?
Yes.
Is that what the target's for?
Yes.
Okay. Listen, that won't bother me in the least. I want the ball in Beckham's hands. Throwing the ball to him 169 times next year, that's okay with me. Because when he gets the ball, good things happen. Good things happen for the Giants. Let me ask you a question about that fourth-round pick, Gallman. And I like the pick. Do we have any word on whether Gallman has returned kicks? I wasn't able to pick up anything about that. Do we know anything about?
I don't believe he has.
I don't believe he has either, Len, but I will check that for you right now.
How about special teams play? Do we know anything about Gallman on special teams?
No, Gallman did play special teams early in his career right?
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Not return kicks.
And then he got to a point where, you know, he's a major player for the team and they didn't put him out there for
correct.
You know, Paul, if we sign Blunt, who doesn't make this roster, Paul?
It's a good question.
At running back.
You would seem to me, if he comes in here, that Gallman, Perkins,
Vereen
are your three with Blunt.
Sure.
And if there's gonna be a fifth, then I guess Drone and Dark will have to fight it out.
Yeah.
Is that simple?
Yeah. Are you going to tell me that five doesn't excite you?
Because that five is pretty damn good.
Oh yeah. Listen, listen, guys. I think this team's loaded. I said it early on. I see no reason why this team isn't playing in late January.
All right, let me ask you a question.
With a good shot at going to the Super Bowl, I think we got a lot of good. If we stay healthy, if our top four guys, if Eli goes down long term, God forbid, Beckham, Landon Collins, Snacks, those four guys, if any one of those guys goes down long term, it's going to be tough to get to late January.
You know, to build a team that's as good as the Giants are on the front of the depth chart, you're going to be somewhat thin on the back of the depth chart. That's just the way it is because the salary cap won't let you build the powerhouse unless you're the Patriots.
Here's the question for you,
and you just gave me the answer without knowing it just a couple seconds ago. If the Giants are a bona fide NFC championship team or a Super Bowl championship team,
right,
does it matter how many targets or catches Beckham or Marshall or any of these guys have? Who cares? Seriously, it's about the fifth trophy in the case. Who cares?
You know,
except the fantasy football freaks. That's the only people who care.
About the Super Bowl trophy and not how many targets Beckham had. I agree with you on
that. All right,
that's why this fantasy
football societies run amok, because they care about stuff like that.
It's also the players that care. Some players do care.
Let me throw this out there, I do appreciate you taking my call.
Yeah.
I think we got, right now, I think we got 50 guys on this roster who are going to be fighting for six spots, and they're the back end of the roster on this team going into training camp. 46 spot is going to be that backup quarterback, one of those two guys. The 53rd guy is going to be our third round pick. He's got that nailed down for a couple of years. That leaves in my mind 47 through 52.
Right.
That's we got 50 guys fighting for those six slots.
You like that, right?
I love that. Yeah, I think we got a lot of players, and I think there is a little depth on this team. Now, I'm hoping for an equality of injuries, and I'm hoping it's not one of the big guys that go down, because then the whole thing goes down the tubes. The four guys that I mentioned to me are the key guys. If one of those guys go down, the defense changes, the offense changes dramatically. But
look how bad the Giants are.
It's only on paper, but I'm feeling pretty good about this roster.
Look how bad the Giants hurt in Green Bay when DRC went down.
He's done a really good job.
Hey, Len, I'll tell you, and I've said this before, this is the best Giants roster I've seen on paper since they won the Super Bowl in 2011. And I can argue, quite frankly, that it's the best roster I've seen put together since 2008. I can make that argument. Appreciate the call.
You're right. I think you're pretty close on that, John. We could argue one year against the other, et cetera.
Right.
But I think you are. There's just no reason why this team should not be playing, in late January.
Did we lose him? Uh-oh. Dominic had a twitchy trigger finger there by accident. Sorry, Len. I think you got everything
he wanted to send Len off on a high note. That was the point.
Let's go to Leo in Bergen County. Then I'm going to get to some of your tweets. What's up, Leo?
How you doing today?
Doing great.
I keep hearing about Thumper, Thumper, Thumper. What I get concerned about is this looks like a great roster right now.
Yeah.
And I think we have great chemistry. If you look at last year, that team played together, and they went for one cause, to win a game. You bring in somebody like LeGarrette Blount, and it's not fair to label him, but he's somebody that's a 1,000-yard rusher, puts the ball in the end zone. Would he be happy with being the type of runner that you're looking at utilizing him as, Paul?
Well, that's why you got to talk to him. No, that's why you have to talk to him. You have to talk to him and say, listen, what's the situation here? This is what we're looking for. How do you feel about it? Can you feel this for us? Are you happy with this? Should we start talking about a deal? You have to me, you kick the tires and you find out if the fit is good. If he comes into the office, sits down and says, yo, I'm a 15 carry a game guy. I'm a 1,000-yard back. I'm not a power situational guy. Well then, goodbye. Have a nice day. We'll get you the limo to the airport.
And remember,
you don't fit.
And
remember,
absolutely.
And Leo, remember this:
you utilize that 90-man roster to go through. Take a kid like a Shane Smith, who's an unknown, could turn into a Henry Heinoski. and be something that really adds to it, or it could be nothing. But yeah. I think what there are, you're going to look in August, and there'll be people that will free up in the roster, the lineman and a thumper. And if you still need them then, I think that's when you jump on one of those things. But I think the chemistry is real important, too. And just like you said, you kick the tires, because if this guy's attitude is that he wants the ball more, and I always get concerned, when Bill Belichick says goodbye with somebody, there's something in his mind. There's something in the chemistry. There's something that has affected.
No, not necessarily. Hold on. I'm going to stop you on this one because I think you're giving us a hypothesis here based on something that's not really in stone. He has a policy of getting rid of guys a year too early as opposed to a year too late because he doesn't want to pay them and wreck his salary cap.
And he's chosen to bring LeGarrette Blount back a couple times already.
He has to walk around and tell his players, look, I'm going to get rid of you a year before you reach your
right
peak.
So don't think that because LeGarrette Blount is on the street that either he's a bad apple or that he's washed up. Don't think that at all.
He might have a year or two left.
I don't
absolutely
think he's washed up by any regard, but I don't, in my opinion, but it's only my opinion, I think, like you
sure
said, it's worth having an interview. Will he be willing to step in and take that type of position?
Well, again,
and
you got to find out.
Your comment relative to Ingram, 42 catches, I'd be thrilled because that changes the chemistry on the team. You've got somebody who can make some crucial plays. Beckham, if he gets 130 looks, now what you've had is a better balance.
Right.
You
I agree.
You don't have them 169 throws to Beckham because we have to force the ball to him.
Leo, thanks for the call, man. We agree.
You got it. Bye.
Appreciate it. Though I'm sure, much like last year, we'll still get the calls. Why aren't you throwing the ball to 16 targets? You're not throwing the ball to Beckham enough.
Yeah, right.
We got those last year. 169 targets last year, more than 10 per game. We still got those calls.
Yeah.
Couple of tweets for you, Paul. And don't worry, David, and we'll get to you next. What do you think of Matt Asiata as a possible thumper in situational situations?
I got the impression that he was going to stay put. Is he going anywhere?
Honestly, I did not look at his free agent status. Did he get let go by the Vikings maybe after the draft?
I thought he was going to stay there because he's free now, but I thought he intended on resigning.
I don't know the answer to that. I'm just going off of a tweet that was sent Paulie Harris at Paulie_S_H_.
Let me see. I thought he was going back to the Vikings. There's nothing about a new contract, so I don't know.
Would he be a good situational thumper for you?
Yeah, I'd probably at least talk to him.
Okay, then we got Freddie J_23. I see McAdoo using Ellison the same way he used John Kuhn, and maybe he'll even help out with some of the short yard carries. I'm not sure if he's going to get many carries, but I could see him be using the backfield a little bit.
See, think about Asiata. I just want to say one thing about him, John. They're listing him at 6 feet and 219. Now, he plays like that, but that's what people are telling me about Goldman, is that he runs strong, he runs hard, he runs physical
right
between the tackles. But here's my problem. He's not 230 pounds.
Right.
When you want a thumper, your thumper is a minimum 230 pounds, usually, unless he's like 5'10 and 220, because now he's a fire hydrant.
See, to me, I'm not sold that they absolutely need one. It would be nice, but if they went to the season next year with this group of running backs, I'm fine with that.
But isn't he going back to Minnesota?
Apparently not. Not yet, at least. Well, they did draft a running back, if I'm not mistaken,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, let me see here.
They pick up one of the Williams? Did they pick? I'm trying to remember who the Vikings drafted
running
back.
Did they add Deshaun Williams too? I can't remember.
No, either Joe or Jamal maybe? Let me look.
Let's try to figure this out. In the meantime, the caller went to. Oh, here's a story. Says Asiata is not likely to return to the Vikings.
Who'd the Vikings draft here?
So says.
Oh, they drafted Dalvin Cook. Durham.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Thank you. I knew they drafted a running
back. Yeah, but Asiata and Cook are not the same player.
Yeah, well, Cook's going to get the ball every single time. That's what the difference is. Anyway, a couple of the tweets here
quick,
Paul.
I'd still rather have a bigger thumper, but Asiata's that kind of player. But again,
Nick Megna, why are you assuming wide receivers will have less targets? The Giants had a ton of three and outs last year. Improve that, and you'll have more chances. Here's the thing, though. Look at Eli Manning's pass attempts. They're only about 10 or 15 off what he was the first 2 years.
Salute.
Sorry about that, folks. Allergy season still with me a little bit. So, even though I agree they'll have fewer three and outs, but his passing attempts were almost, you know, all within 15 or 18 of each other the last two or three seasons. So I don't think that's going to make a significant difference.
Yeah, within 20.
You might have another 10 or 15, but I don't think it's going to be much more than that. Let's see. Do you think there'll be fewer passes to the running backs? Ben Gruen asks.
I mean, look, if Shane Vereen's healthy and plays 16 games, he'll catch more passes than the running backs did last season. But, that's not to say that, you know, there's going to be appreciably fewer targets. Just because he catches more doesn't necessarily, you know, the higher percentage of receptions, I would think, would be what you would want to ask. And I think that the Vereen will do a better job in that.
All right, let's see.
I'm just looking here at Eli's attempts. Just FYI, folks. In 2007, Eli threw the ball 529 times.
I mean, different offense, though.
Offense. It was the Gilbride offense. Yeah. In 11, it was 589 times. And now, in the last 3 years, 601, 618, and 598. You know, it is, you know, it's going up. I mean, that's just the way it is. I did want to say one thing, though, to the caller who was, it might have even been Len, who was talking about how complete this roster is. There are still two things, maybe three things missing that they need to get corrected before they get to their final 53. They need the thumper, in my opinion. They need the fourth cornerback. And who will that be? I don't know right now. They got to figure that out.
And one more tweet. I'm
and
sorry.
Then I was going to say
sure.
Potentially.
Sorry
about potentially.
That.
It's all right. Potentially, if B.J. Goodson's not the answer
yeah.
at first and second down middle linebacker, they'll need to find out who that is.
Louis Cristantiello, and this one's just for you, Paul. It's a good day when P-Dot makes Giant fans smile by bashing the Dallas defense. I thought I'd give that one to you.
Okay.
201-939-4513.
That's simply based on what usually happens in the league to young, new, rebuilt defenses. I'm not trying to assail any of their players because, quite frankly, they picked a lot of good prospects.
No, but you're right. And it will take them some time to figure things out on the back end, no doubt about it. The question is, can the other facets make up for that until they figure things out? Let's go to David in North Carolina. He's up next on line one. What's up, David?
Hey, guys. Just wanted to Lynn kind of touched on it, and Paul and some of his comments touched on it, but I think I can still offer a different perspective. I'm not so much concerned about how many catches somebody has or how many targets go down. My concern with the offense is how much do the looks vary? I mean, you know, we kept hearing last year, well, the reason we didn't get out of 11 personnel was that's our best players. And I was one of the few people that sided with McAdoo. I want the best guys out there, and we didn't have any other players that would benefit the offense for us to change the look, to go to two tight end set. Well, how does the Evan Engram pick change that? To me, the 11 personnel is still lined up, whether you have Shepherd in the slot, whether you have Engram in the slot, whether you have Engram kicked out wide. To me, defenses are still let me tell you what I would do if I'm a defensive coordinator going up against the Giants. I'm still playing my linebackers 5 yards off the ball, and I'm daring the Giants to run it up the gut because I don't think they can do it, and DJ Fluker doesn't scare me, and I'm going to make Rhett Ellison prove it if he's in the game that he's going to be that big of an addition, and I'm going to play off. And I'm going to make the Giants prove that they can dink and dunk down the field for 60 yards. Because even with the addition of Engram, I don't see how it makes this offense any different.
Well, David, here's why.
He's a chess piece that takes the place of another chess piece.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, you can go 11 personnel and have Engram be the tight end on second and third down. And then all of a sudden, then what do defenses do in terms of covering the tight end down the middle of the field?
Right. And don't you think that this offense still relies on, unless Paul, I know he's high on Fluker being a huge human being, and we can pound out some of these short yardage situations, but I think it puts even more pressure on Eli, and I'm not an Eli basher. I'm an Eli fan. But
he's not the most accurate passer. So I still think defenses are going to say, okay, you know, hey, this we can't cover everybody, but you got to hit him. And you know what? You may only get 2 yards on a run play, but that's a positive 2 yards. You throw an incomplete pass over somebody's head at their feet, that's no yards. That's zero. So I still think defenses are going to give us a lot of the same looks, and we're going to have to prove we can beat it because I think they're going to say, you know, in three downs, let's see if Eli can hit the guy in stride. Let's see if you can make that complete pass.
Look, David,
and we're
going
to try to come up and tackle him.
David, I think we both agree with you that that's what defense are probably going to try to do to start the year. Why wouldn't you? It worked last year. So I agree. That's what they're going to try to do. And you know what? It might work. We'll see. Here's two reasons why I don't think it'll be as effective. One, and what I talked about before, is that that two-safety deep defense is much more difficult to run successfully when you have a tight end that can threaten the seam down the middle, which Ingram can do. And number two, I think Paul Perkins is a much more elusive runner than Rashad Jennings, and he's going to be able to make defenses pay more for only having 6 or 7 guys in the box. Now, if those two things don't happen, you know what? You're going to be right. My bet is that one of those two things will happen. We got to run, David. Thanks for the call, pal.
Yes, sir.
Great points. Great points.
I think when Red Ellison signed with the Giants, you heard a lot of things from Adrian Peterson about how much he thought of Red Ellison.
And he'll help the running game too, by the way.
So, to me, well, the caller mentioned that. He was saying, you know, speculation, you know, do we think that Ellison is going to be a significant part of the blocking scheme? I don't see how he couldn't be.
I remember.
That's what he does.
And like I said, getting out of 11 personnel would be having Ellison and Ingram on the field. You can do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And by the way,
that.
Remember, Brandon Marshall's like 34 years old. Do you want him playing 98% of the snaps?
No.
Exactly. So you can, you know, move him and Shepard in and out and do it. And maybe you want to give Beckham a couple snaps off. So he wouldn't get killed out there.
Yeah, as high as I am on Fluker, I'm thinking that Ellison is going to be a big, big factor in this offense.
Final call of the show, Hudson. In Brooklyn. What's going on, Hudson? How are you?
Hey, what's up, guys? Just want to make a couple quick points.
Sure.
First thing I want to say, I think the Eagles are going to be a sneaky good team.
I agree.
In the East, and I think they have a chance to win the East. I also think that the Giants could be a more talented team this year and win less games because how good the East is.
Okay, I think that's possible too. And by the way, I also think the teams that are playing outside the division are probably better next year than they were last year too. I agree with you.
They could have to fight a lot harder just to win 10 games.
Yeah, agreed.
Derek Barnett, draft pick, the reason I think the Eagles are going to give the Giants a lot of problems is they have Derek Barnett now, and the best thing he does is bend the corner around that left tackle with speed and with agility. And that is Flowers' kryptonite. So hopefully, I think if Flowers lost weight, he's already a strong guy. If he lost weight, he'd become lighter on his feet and make his kickback more when he's pass protecting a little better for him. He could move a little with more agility to defend those speed rushes around the corner.
I agree. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Finish up.
Yeah, I just also want to make a point that I don't think I think the gap between Ingram and Howard is not as big as a lot of people are saying. Looking at the tape, I think the biggest difference between the two is the 15 pounds that Howard has over Ingram. When I look at them blocking, they're pretty much the same thing. None of them are like you said, Howard Cross, the ex-Giants tight end.
Yeah.
None of them block like this guy. They're both just basically good blockers. And
where did that come from?
Looking at the tape, I'm telling you, if you look at the tape.
Hudson, I respect your opinion. Wow. To call Evan Ingram and O.J. Howard equivalent as blockers is lunacy.
Not equivalent. I didn't say equivalent.
You said they were close.
It's not a big difference. It's not a big difference.
Yes, there is.
Howard is more of an inline blocker, yes. And Ingram blocks.
Where does blocking happen?
The H-back position. But I've seen, when looking at Ingram's tape, I've seen Ingram block defensive ends, including Garrett and Tayshaun Hall when they played against Texas A&M.
Here's what I'm going to say, okay? I understand the point you're trying to make in that Ingram gets in the way when he was asked to get in the way against some of those guys, and look, I'm not going to tell you you're the first guy to tell me to watch the Texas A&M tape, because I've had people say that to me. Oh, go watch that tape. Ingles a better blocker than you think he is. He's a get-in-the-way guy. He's not a blocker. He's not going to take a guy and push him 3 yards backwards. He's not going to make a 280-pound lineman, you know, take steps in the wrong direction.
You're not going to run a stretch play behind Evan Engram and tell him to block the defensive end.
He's a get-in-your-way guy.
Me Howard pushes the defensive end 3 yards backwards?
He's capable of
it,
sure.
He's capable of it.
Has he done it? Look at the tape. You tell me if he's pushing.
Okay, time out. Hudson, hold on.
3 yards backwards.
Where's this coaching tape that you're watching, by the way, to watch all these plays?
All you got to do is watch his games. You know, it's not a special tape. You watch his games, and you watch him. And you look at who is he blocking, and how well is he doing.
Wait, time out. So you're telling me O.J. Howard isn't a stronger, more physical blocker than Evan Engram. That's what you're telling me.
No, I said from the beginning, he has 15 pounds over him. And that's the biggest difference between the two.
And that's a big difference, by the way.
Engram is also a strong guy. Give him a year or two in the league. Let him build up his strength. He's a 235 pounds.
Here's where
245, 250.
Here's where what you're saying is going to work out okay. All right, and everybody knows who's listened to the show now for a couple of weeks is that I view Engram as becoming the JerMichael Finley of the Giants. Okay. Finley lined up 7% of the time as an inline blocker with the 2011 Packers. And you know why? Because they used him as a move blocker, a get-in-the-way guy more often than not.
Right.
I discussed this with you, John. Mm-hmm. That's what Engram does. When you watch his tape, more often than not, he's a get-in-the-way move blocker. That's if he was a powerful inline anchor blocker, he'd have been on the end of the line of scrimmage at Ole Miss more often than not, but he wasn't. You know why? Because that's not what he is.
And again, Engram is a willing blocker. He tries hard. He works at it. He's willing. He shows the effort. And I was trying to sell people on his blocking at the Senior Bowl, even before the pick got made. You know, Tony Pauline was on with us. He raved about the blocking job that Engram did at the Senior Bowl the week of the draft and that Monday when we had him on.
He did.
He talked about what a good job he did blocking
at the Senior
Bowl.
I wasn't sold, by the way, at that point.
I know you weren't. And look, it's okay to say that Engram is a better blocker than maybe people gave him credit for, but at the same time, don't go and say that he's O.J. Howard.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
Why don't you guys ever speak about the difference between their route running and how much better a route runner
Hudson. My quote, Evan Engram is the best route runner and receiver of the tight ends in the draft.
He's by far.
That was my quote after the Giants made the pick.
Everybody has said
but
this.
It's not close between the two.
No, he is. He's easily.
You don't see him running any routes. You see him coming out the flat or.
Hudson, no one's arguing with that.
I don't really see him doing any of the route tree or anything like that.
Engram is by far the most explosive, most dangerous receiving tight end in the draft.
Yes.
Everybody has said that. I don't understand what you're trying to argue. No one is disputing what you've said in that regard.
So if the gap between his receiving and Howard's receiving is that large, and I don't think the gap between their blocking is as large, why wouldn't he be considered the tight end with the most upside or the better tight end?
Depends on how you're going to use him.
And it depends what the evaluator's opinion is of the blocking side of things. And the other argument, too, is that the way they used Howard at Alabama, they very much underutilized his receiving
skills.
Which
Saban admitted to Bob Pop on his Sirius show a few weeks ago and said flat out, we did not exploit Howard's talents to the fullest because of what we were doing.
Hudson, this is my sense. My sense is you have a lot of issues with Giant fans that are complaining about the pick, but you're trying to make points to us that we agree with. In a lot of ways.
No, I wouldn't say that. I just come to a realization because I felt the same way that Howard was that much better than Engram or that much better than the rest of the tight ends. But going over their games, I just don't think the gap is that large.
So here's what I will say.
That the Giants should have traded up to spend a third-round pick and trade up to get Howard. I can see it makes total sense to me why Reese didn't want to do it because it's like there's not a big gap between these two guys. Why would I give up a third-round pick and when I could just get Engram?
Thank you, Hudson. Appreciate the call.
Appreciate it. And here's the one thing he's right about, John. Given what the Giants apparently want to do with their scheme and how they want to use their tight end, Engram right now is a really great fit for what they're going to try to do. And that's the tricky part, and we've talked about this for weeks, months even, going into the draft. When you're looking at these players, part of the whole deal is projecting, how's he fit into your offense, and what are you going to do with the guy? Because that's why one guy's rated up here on your board, right, and the other guy's rated down here on your board. Because guess what? You want your guy to do these things, and you don't want him to do these things.
And the one thing I won't accept, you can't say there's not much difference between these two guys blocking. Because one can block in line, and the other can't.
That's
a big difference.
That's just
the fact that one guy can block in line, and the other can't. That's a big problem.
It's the one thing he said that he was totally incoherent on, if you will. Everything else he said, though, we had already said.
Absolutely. No question about it. Yeah. We agree 100%. Hudson, good call. We appreciate it, and we love your optimism. But
Ingram will work out fine for the Giants. Correct. I know they know how to use him.
Right.
All right? McAdoo knows what he's doing with that.
Yeah, he's had plenty like that his whole career. No question. 20. All right. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Great job tomorrow. Are you back with Meadow tomorrow?
Yes.
Or did you switch? You're
yes.
good. All right. So Paul and Meadow tomorrow. And then, we have rookies arriving for rookie minicamp on Thursday. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmunk. Thanks for joining us. Dominic's champing at the bit to get some lunch. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody.